You're listening to the Witch in the Woods podcast, Season 2, Episode 2, Waiting and Hoping.
Is dinner ready yet?
Grimalkin, chill.
Just look at me. I'm a disgrace. My fur is getting grayer by the second.
Here, have a snack while we're waiting.
I don't want any more trail mix. I still have raisins stuck in my teeth.
Okay, here, dinner's done. It's hot, though,
so... Out of my way!
Grimalkin, you almost took off my finger.
Jeez, I thought she was obsessed with food before!
She's using a lot of energy, remember?
Yes, maintaining spells takes a lot out of her. We'll need to keep an eye on her fur, children. I know it's hard to believe that she wouldn't ask for food, but it will be very easy for her to tire. She may not notice before it's too late.
What do you mean? Too late?
We've never been this far from Mamichka, and we've never depended on Grimalkin to maintain so many spells. I don't know what might happen if she gets too weak.
I'll keep snacks ready for her, Barnaby. She won't go hungry on my watch.
Thank you. Now then, this meal looks lovely, Ari. Thank you for cooking. Which one's mine?
Here you go.
Smells delicious.
Well, that was very satisfying. Next time, not so much pepper, okay?
I didn't put any...
Just not as much next time.
Grimalkin, why don't we check in on Koro?
Yeah, I guess we should. I wonder if she stopped screaming yet.
It's quite a shock to be turned into a human.
She should be grateful. You wouldn't let me change us. Would have made the bus journey a lot more pleasant.
And would have used more of our precious energy. And would put more strain on you.
Oh, pish-posh. I could handle it.
Just handle reaching out to Koro for now.
I hope she remembers how to answer. Naomi, do you have the mirror?
Yeah. Here you go.
Thank you. Now, let's see.
Hello? Hello? How do you use this thing again?
Koro! All you have to do is look into the mirror and talk.
Grimalkin? Oh, thank goodness! When are you coming back? You've been gone for ages.
We haven't been gone for ages, Koro. We've been gone for one day.
It's only been a day? Ugh, being a human is awful. I hate it.
You should be thanking me for the pleasure. I'd love to be a human.
No, you wouldn't. I tried to eat some delicious mosquitoes earlier, and I couldn't even catch them. Humans are so slow, and they can't even fly, which is like so basic.
You shouldn't be eating mosquitoes. What happened to the meals that Ari made for you?
I don't want that. I want mosquitoes.
Koro, can you hear me?
Olivia?
Yes. Listen, I know you've got to be a little overwhelmed with everything. I mean, you weren't even meant to come to North Carolina, much less be turned into a human.
I know. Imagine eating your favorite food from your favorite place and returning home nice and full. And just as soon as you dig your toes into your favorite wood beam, then bam, slam, whoosh, you're in a whole new place and you have to take yucky medicine.
And now you're a human, which is even more confusing.
Yes, it is.
Can I tell you a secret, Koro?
Okay.
Sometimes I feel strange in my body, too.
You do?
Yes. Sometimes I'm clumsy or wish I could fly.
Oh, you should get Grimalkin to change you into a bat. Then you could fly.
Maybe I'll do that when we get back. Then you can teach me what it's like to be a bat.
Okay.
Hey, I want to be a bat, too. No, an eagle. No, a bear. Wait. A dragon.
Hey now, this isn't a free-for-all. I can't hold it much longer.
Koro, how is Mamichka?
She's the same.
Are you applying the herbs like Grimalkin showed you?
Yes, but what What happens when I run out?
The children will bring you supplies, remember?
What children? The children are with you!
The changeling children, Koro. The ones who look like Olivia, Boz, Ari, and Naomi. Remember? They're going to check in on you every day, so you just tell them if you need something.
Oh, that's right. Okay, okay.
You're doing great, Koro.
I think you look good.
I do not look good. Do not insult me like that. I have this weird nose, and I can barely hear, and I can't even tell you what it's like.
Oh, that might get harder the further we go.
Oh, Grimmy, your fur is going gray again. Here, have the rest of my dinner. I'm full.
Don't mind if I do.
Well, it seems like Koro is doing about how we expected.
Thank you for calming her down, Olivia. You were very good with her.
No problem.
So, now what?
Now we wait.
For how long?
For as long as it takes.
Great.
Naomi, Boz, can you please clean up dinner? Make sure to gather any trash. We don't want to leave anything behind.
So that nothing can track us?
Don't worry. The things that are tracking us don't need trash to find us.
What?
Grimalkin is just trying to scare you.
I'm already scared enough out here, in the woods, in the dark.
Oh, come now, Olivia. The forest is home to many animals, and you love animals. There's nothing to fear.
I guess that's true.
How about I tell you a bedtime story?
Is it going to be scary?
Maybe.
Oh, let her tell it, Olivia. We haven't heard a good story in weeks.
Fine.
Gather around the fire, and I'll tell you a tale of greed. Francis was taking his great Dane Duke for a walk one beautiful spring day, when his normally well-behaved dog, if there is such a thing, began to pull on his leash.
Duke! What's wrong with you, heel?
As Francis was struggling to get Duke under control, he noticed that a woman with the smallest dog he had ever seen was doing the same.
Duchess! Where are you going?
I'm so sorry, ma'am. Duke usually is quite the gentleman.
Oh, I don't know what could have gotten into my little Duchess either. She seems absolutely determined to come say hello.
The pair let their dogs sniff each other, unsure of what might happen. But as they excitedly rubbed noses, it was clear what had been going on.
Oh my, I think it's love at first sight.
I think you're right. Would you like to accompany us on our walk? If they're in love, we should also get to know each other.
It would be my pleasure.
Over the next several weeks, the four became inseparable. They began to take daily walks, and Francis found new ways to surprise and delight Colette. He would bring her flowers or a fresh croissant, still warm from the bakery. Colette told him all about her grown daughter, who now had a family of her own, and Francis regaled her with stories from his own life. When he proposed a dinner date, Colette eagerly agreed. As they sat down at their table, Francis noticed that Colette was still wearing her gloves.
My dear, can I take your gloves for you?
Oh, no thank you. I know it's strange, but too many people stare if I take off my gloves.
Why do people stare?
The accident I told you about. The one that killed my husband. Well, I was injured as well. I lost my hand, you see, and now I have a hand made from gold.
Colette pulled her glove back slightly to show Francis, and his eyes widened as they took in the flash of gold that was revealed.
A hand made from gold? I've never heard of such a thing.
It's odd, I know, but what am I to do with all of my gold anyway? Might as well put it to good use.
Until this moment, Francis had not been aware of Colette's great wealth. She was new to the area, and he hadn't put together who she was. The mention of the accident and the loss of her hand made him realize that he was sitting across the table from one of the richest women in the world. He suddenly had the desire to grab her, to stuff her in a bag and run away. If Colette had seen his eyes in that moment, she might have had an idea about what was to come, but unluckily for her, she was too busy looking at her menu to notice. It was in those few heated seconds that Francis made his plan. A dastardly, atrocious plan that would make him rich beyond his wildest dreams.
Why don't we order a bottle of champagne?
Oh, that would be lovely. But why? What's the occasion?
Simply being together is occasion enough for me.
Over the next several months, Francis spared no expense to dazzle Colette. Private seats at the opera, the fanciest dinners in town, and gift after gift had Colette enamored with who she believed to be the most charming man in town. It wasn't until after they were married that Francis really put his plan into action. Francis began to poison Colette. Just a little bit at a time, a few drops in her nightly glass of wine. Not enough for her to taste, and not enough for anyone to become suspicious when she slowly got sicker and sicker. She was wasting away, and Francis played the doting husband role perfectly. Her daughter, Elizabeth, was home with the newborn and couldn't visit, but she called every day to check in.
Thank you so much for taking care of my mom, Francis. She's so lucky to have you.
There's no need to thank me. I'm simply fulfilling my duty as her husband. It hurts me deeply to see her so ill.
Mom's strong. She'll turn around soon, especially with your care. She has told me all about how you won't even let the cook make her dinner, that you insist on making it yourself.
I'm just trying everything I can to bring her comfort. In fact, I'm making her some soup right now.
Poisoning your wife is one thing, but pouring poison into her dinner while talking to her daughter? That's a completely different level of awful. Colette soon passed away, and the very night of her funeral, Francis slept with the golden hand under his pillow, dreaming giddily of all he would do with the money he had just inherited. He was swimming through a vat of gold in his dreams when a loud bang awoke him. He sat up with a start, shivering as he felt a cold wind swirl in from the chimney. He got up to stoke the logs, but was forced to stand still as the wind got stronger, throwing his books against the walls, scattering papers and swirling around him with such force that he simply couldn't move.
What's going on?
Francis had his arms over his face, trying to block the aggressive wind, panic coursing through his body. Through his arms, he saw a bright light appear in the tornado. A greenish-white light that was glowing brighter and brighter. As he peeked out, he felt as if his veins had been filled with ice. There, floating toward him, her face twisted in anger, was Colette.
Where's my golden hand?
What? This can't be happening.
Francis tried to back away, but the wind kept him still as Colette's ghost approached. Her dark eyes bored into his own, and he could feel her fury as she continued to shout at him.
Where is my golden hand? You stole my life, and you stole my hand, and I want it back!
It's under the pillow. Take it, take it!
Francis frantically pointed at the bed, hoping that taking the hand would make Colette go away. Colette's gaze never left his own, and after a moment, he saw a flash of gold out of the corner of his eye. All he saw before the world went black were Colette's eyes, the darkness growing bigger and bigger until they swallowed him whole. The next morning, when the maid came to straighten his room, she screamed. There, dead on the floor, was Francis, the golden hand clutched around his throat.
Wait, I thought he kind of liked her at first. Why did he kill her?
Greed can be stronger than love. He did like her, but once he saw her golden hand, he could think of nothing else.
That kind of reminds me of the Black Ribbon Necklace story.
Oh yeah, I thought it sounded familiar.
Wait! What happened to the dogs? To Duchess?
Do you really want to know?
Oh, Grimalkin, he wouldn't.
Wouldn't he?
Grimalkin, if you could, you know, make it a little easier on Olivia.
Fine. Duke and Duchess went to live with Colette's daughter, where she fed them steaks every day, and they slept on satin pillows, and they lived happily ever after. Is that better?
Oh yes, that's lovely.
Barnaby, what are we waiting for again?
We're waiting for them to notice us.
Who?
Our friends, I hope.
You hope what? You hope that they notice us, or you hope that they're still your friends?
Both.
What does that mean?
That war we've talked about? It split our world in two. Those of us on Mamichka's side, and those who...
Who are not on our side.
Right. When we went into hiding, it was a long time ago. We've been so focused on getting Mamichka's strength back that we haven't been able to keep up with what's happening.
So, you mean that the beings who were on your side, they might not be on your side anymore? We could be meeting your enemies?
I doubt that they would have switched allegiances. Their priorities have always aligned with Mamichka's.
But I thought you said that you haven't talked to anyone the whole time you've been hiding. They don't know what happened to you, or even if you're still alive.
Yes, but they are the truest beings I know. I would trust them with my life before, and I still feel that way.
The ones we are fighting against, they are very powerful. Even if our friends' priorities have typically sided them with us, they are also trying to survive. The opposite side could make their lives very uncomfortable. Mamichka's disappearance might have cast just enough doubt to change their allegiance.
Then what the heck are we doing out here? What if they kill us or pretend to be your friends, but then turn us over to the other side?
I just can't imagine them doing that. Once you meet them, you'll see.
But you don't know that for sure, do you?
No, I don't.
Suddenly, that ghost story doesn't feel as scary as life does.
You said it.
How about another story? To take your mind off all of this.
Sure, Barnaby. Another story sounds good. I don't think I could sleep right now if I tried.
Make it a good one, though, since we're all probably gonna die.
Don't be dramatic. Ugh, there's only a tiny chance we're about to die.
I know another story like Grimalkin's Tale of Greed. The weeks after a wedding are supposed to be the most joyous in a young couple's life. Ever since Edmund had proposed to Eleanor with the most gorgeous emerald ring she had ever seen, they had been counting the days to when they could finally live together. As Edmund carried Eleanor over the threshold in her wedding dress, they both laughed with joy because the moment had finally arrived.
My dear, I cannot possibly describe how happy I am.
Oh, darling, it feels as though I might simply burst with joy.
The two settled into their new home over the next several weeks, finding their way in their new life together. Just as they started to feel that they had found their rhythm, Eleanor fell ill. It started out as exhaustion, but soon she was pale and sweating as she burned with fever. Edmund stayed by her side, dabbing her forehead and trying to convince her to drink. He had returned with a fresh pitcher of water one evening when he discovered Eleanor lying very still.
Eleanor? Eleanor! Wake up! Oh no! Oh no, oh no, oh no!
Eleanor was unresponsive to Edmund's shouting, and he ran out to fetch the doctor. After the doctor examined her, he gave Edmund the news he had feared most.
No. No, no, no.
Edmund was inconsolable in his grief. He wept in the doctor's arms, his dreams of the life he planned to build with Eleanor dashed. He refused to leave his room even for the funeral, too distraught to get dressed. The only thing he did insist on was that Eleanor should be buried with her engagement ring. He imagined that if she were buried with that ring, she would still be able to feel his love for her, even in death. The turnout for the funeral was large, the whole town coming to pay their respects to the young bride. Even in death, she was gorgeous in her coffin, her emerald ring glinting throughout the ceremony. The family had requested that the church wait to bury Eleanor for a few days, certain that Edmund would want to see her. The priest agreed, and Eleanor's coffin was stored in the back room of the church, awaiting Edmund's final goodbye. Now, while most of the attendees at Eleanor's funeral were there to pay their respects, there was one man who was there for more than that. Word of Eleanor's spectacular emerald ring had spread far and wide, and it was rumored to be worth a fortune. Jasper, a man who had no qualms about stealing, traveled to the funeral to see if the ring was as spectacular as the rumors said it was. He was excited to see that it was, in fact, even bigger than he had been told, and he had a hard time keeping his greedy smile from spreading across his face at the sight of it. When he overheard the family asking the priest to delay the burial, he realized he could simply return to the church that evening and steal it. He waited until midnight, creeping quietly into the church to find Eleanor. He slowly opened her coffin, wincing as it creaked slightly. He reached in and grabbed her hand, cackling to himself as he put his fingers on the ring. He tried to slip it off her finger, but it was stuck fast. He yanked and yanked, but to no avail. The ring would not come off her finger. He looked around, then slipped into the church kitchen to grab a knife. He quickly sawed off her finger, pulling off the ring and holding it up to the moonlight to gaze at its beauty. Even stained with blood, it was gorgeous. He reached up to close the coffin, but just as he did, Eleanor began to groan. The thief froze in shock, slowly moving his eyes to Eleanor's face. Her eyes opened and looked right back at him, her mouth twisting into a grimace as she groaned. The thief dropped the ring and ran, screaming so loud and hard he thought he might never stop. Eleanor looked around in confusion, then slowly climbed out of the coffin and began to walk home. As you may remember from previous stories, there are some forms of sickness that can make a person appear as if they are in a deep coma and not dead at all. Before modern medicine, it was sometimes hard for doctors to tell the difference. Eleanor had simply been in a very deep sleep, and when the thief cut off her finger, he had shocked her body out of that state, saving her from being buried alive. Eleanor stumbled home, holding her bloody finger to her chest as she knocked on the door with her other hand.
Edmund! Edmund, my love! Open the door for me!
Edmund heard her calling from outside and looked out his window, his eyes swollen with tears and his head throbbing with grief.
Be gone, ghost! Leave me in peace!
My darling, I am no ghost! See how I bleed? I am alive!
Alive?
Edmund ran outside to his bride, only believing it when he was able to touch her and know that she was real. They rejoiced and tended to Eleanor's wound, grateful that such a deceitful plot could bring them back together. And the thief, you ask? Well, they say that once he stopped screaming, he swore to dedicate his life to goodness and to help others as much as he could. He became known for his charity, dedicating his life to helping others. The emerald ring did not bring him any earthly fortune, but it did guide him toward a better life. A life filled with riches, nonetheless.
I liked that one a lot better.
Better than my story?
No offense, Grimalkin. It's just, this one had a more positive ending.
Can you imagine how scared that thief must have been? He cuts off her finger, and then she opens her eyes and looks right at him. Yikes!
Yeah, I think that would scare anybody straight.
Kinda sad she lost her finger, though.
A small price to exchange for her life.
That's true.
Can you imagine what the priest saw the next morning? He comes in and sees the coffin empty and blood everywhere. I bet he had a heart attack.
I bet you're right. I hadn't thought of that, Ari.
So, are we gonna stay up all night?
No, we should get some sleep. It might be several days before they contact us.
Several days?
It's possible. I'm not sure how often they monitor this area anymore.
It felt like your plan was a lot more solid before we left the cabin.
Did it? You really don't listen, do you, Buzz?
I mean that you all seemed so confident that you knew where we were going and who could help.
I know we are in the right spot, and I know they will help us. It just might take a moment for them to feel that we are here, waiting for them.
Great. I'm still nervous about sleeping in the woods. Don't worry, Olivia. We'll all be in a tent together. Just pretend it's a slumber party.
Yeah, and just hope you can sleep through Boz's snoring.
Boz, you snore?
Yeah, sounds like a lawnmower.
What? I do not.
Yes, you do.
Hush! Children, quiet.
Is that them? Your friends?
I'm not sure. Oh, no.
What is it? What's wrong?
Hurry, children. Hide in the tent.
Ah!
Oh, no. Ari.
Let me just hang Ari. Olivia!
Don't come any closer. I'm magic. I'm powerful. I...
Boz, with me. Hurry. We are...
Naomi.
Olivia.
Ari.
Barnaby.
Mulkin.
Oh, no. I'm all alone. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Thank you for listening to the Witch in the Woods podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and follow us on social media at The Witch in the Woods Pod.
The Witch in the Woods podcast is a Zombie Burrito production and was created, written, and executive produced by Becky McLaughlin. This episode was directed and audio designed by Becky McLaughlin and features the voice talents of John Furr as Barnaby, Caitlin Stafford as Grimalkin, Astoria McLaughlin as Naomi, Kryn McLaughlin as Olivia, Maddox Butler as Boz, and Riley Meehan as Ari. The Golden Hand featured the voice talents of Sean Carey as Francis, Sarah Thompson as Colette, and Sandy Scott as Elizabeth. The Emerald Ring featured the voice talents of Michael Ackerman as Edmund, and Sandy Scott as Eleanor. Thank you so much for listening. And a huge thank you to our Patreon subscribers, Billy and Lynn Hill, Sarah Bowers, Lindsay Carlisle, Amanda Wills, Mark Taylor, the Hayes Family, Sarah Thompson, the Johnson Family, Emily Emerson, and Jamie Gearhart. We are so grateful for your support. Until next time.